Thank you very much. Good evening, everybody. First of all, thank you to you all for coming out to our Appreciate Learnathon. A special thank you to Nathan Kirsch for dedicating the program in memory of his beloved brother, Jerry. Ben Tzion Ben Yehuda Pesach HaKohen, Zichrono Livracha, may his neshama have an aliyah from the learning that we do here tonight. Thank you as well to Rabbi Torchiner for taking on the hosting duties during my shiur, as well as his general technological expertise in getting this running. It's not very easy to simultaneously screen all those who are joining the Zoom, share the source sheet, and making sure everything else is good to go. So that's much appreciated on my end, and I thank him for that. So with that, Brishut, my teachers and colleagues at the Kollel, I'd like to talk a little bit about what I call the strange custom that we find at the end of Megillat Rut. Just a note about the program as well, by the way, the program, for those who are unfamiliar with our layout or the organization of the program, six of us will be speaking to you tonight, each for half an hour. Most likely you've seen the schedule already if you're here at the shiur, but just a heads up that you have more coming beyond my shiur. My shiur will be about half an hour, and then Rabbi Yaris, followed by the rest of the Avreichim and Roshei and Skan of the Beit Midrash. So, as I mentioned, there's a bit of a strange custom that we find in the fourth chapter of Megillat Rut. I brought you a selection from that chapter to sort of get an idea as to what exactly is happening here. Now, just some background before we get there even. At this point in the Megillah, for those of you that are somewhat familiar with the plot, we have our main character, arguably, who is Rut. We have another main character whose name is Boaz. Essentially, Rut, as well as her mother-in-law, Naomi, both lose their husbands while they are in Moab. At some point, they return to Beit Lechem, their original city. They manage to, Rut especially, gathers food from Boaz's field during the harvest seasons. The harvest seasons end, and Rut basically goes through, in chapter 3, this proposal, pretty much, to Boaz to ask him if he would be okay to, quote-unquote, redeem her or marry her, as it seems from that story and from this story. And as part of it, there seems to be some sort of transaction going on called Geula, redemption, which involved either purchase of land or purchase of rights to land from Rut and from Naomi, her mother-in-law. And this is what's happening in the fourth chapter. And what has happened is there's this closer relative who has a first right to the redemption. His name, either according to some midrashim, is actually Tov. However, the simple understanding is that his name is not mentioned, and he is referred to here as the Redeemer, HaGoel, and you'll see him in these verses that we're about to read. And Boaz basically tells him, if you're interested in redeeming, again, either the land or the rights to the land that Naomi has from her family, from when she was originally here, you also have to redeem and marry Ruth along with this. And at that point, the Goel, this anonymous Redeemer, Ploni Almoni, says, you know what, I'm out. And that's where we pick up in the story. Vayomer HaGoel, the Redeemer replied, Lo uchal lig oli, we're in source number one, then I cannot redeem it for myself, pen ashchit et nachalati, lest I impair my own estate. What exactly, what damage would be caused by redeeming the field, specifically, and by marrying Ruth, is a question which is discussed at length by many of the commentaries. We're not here for that today, but for whatever the reason, this anonymous Redeemer says, it's not for me. I can't do this. So he turns instead to Boaz. He says, Boaz, I think you can do it. You're the next in line. So therefore, you take over my right of redemption, for I am unable to exercise it. And then we have what comes across as really almost a parenthetical comment, which is what I'd like to focus on today. Vizot lefanim b'Yisrael. This was something done in the past. This was formerly done in Israel. Al ha-Geulah v'al ha-Timurah, for any sort of redemption or exchange. Lekayem kol davar, to validate any transaction. Shalaf ish na'alo v'natan l're'ehu. One man would take off his shoe and hand it to the other. Vizot ha-Te'udah b'Yisrael. And as we have the translation here, such was the practice in Israel. So we get this comment to say, this is what people used to do. And then the narrative returns, Vayomer HaGoel leBoaz Shmelach. So the Redeemer says to Boaz, acquire for yourself, Vayishlof Na'alo, and he takes off his shoe. And then we continue with the story. Boaz turns to the elders who are watching the ceremony, and he says, "You're witnesses that I'm acquiring these rights," and it goes on and on and on. And I wanted to zoom in on those two bolded verses in front of you in source number one and say, what is going on here? What is the meaning of this very strange transaction when it seems someone taking off their shoe and giving their shoe to someone else? What does that accomplish? What is this doing here? And hopefully, in advance of Shavuot, is there anything we can learn from this? So we start with the crucial Gemara, which actually talks about, and if you could just move down a little bit on the source sheet, just so we have the full English translation in front of us. The Gemara actually talks about the way that this is looked upon as a formal method of acquisition in terms of legal matters. When have I legally acquired something? And the Gemara, we normally know, refers to this as a kinyan, what we will translate as an acquisition. And that's the way the Gemara phrases this. The Gemara frames this really as some sort of acquisition, but the big machloket that we're going to focus on within that Gemara, and we will get back to it a little bit later, is the question of when it says at the end of the verse, Vayom, and in the third verse that you have in front of you, Vayomer ha'goel avoaz knelach, and the Redeemer said to Boaz, acquire for yourself, Vayishlof na'alo, he drew off his shoe. The question is who? Although the verse says that one person would take off their shoe and hand it to another, the Gemara asks the question of who would do that. So the Gemara tells us, Kitanai, this is actually a debate amongst the Tanaim, it's a dispute. So quotes almost the entire verse. So first of all, it says, what types of cases are we talking about here? Gula zo mechira, the redemption is some sort of sale, and the chen hu omer lo yigael, and timura, and when the verse refers to timura zo chalipin, this refers to some sort of an exchange, the chen hu omer lo yachlifenu v'lo yamiroto, and it brings verses to show that the Geula, what we refer to as redemption, is actually some sort of sale, and that Timura is some sort of swap. L'kayim kol davar shalaf ishna alon v'natan l're'ehu, asks the Gemara our question, which we put forth. Mi natan l'mi? Who gave their shoe to whom? It just says, he took off his shoe. So was it the person who was selling, meaning the goel, who was with basically saying, I am not going to exercise my right to redeem, I am giving those rights to you, or I'm allowing you to purchase the field from Naomi? Was it the Redeemer who took off his shoe and handed it to Boaz? Or was it Boaz who took off his shoe and handed it to the otherwise potential Redeemer? And the Gemara says, the first opinion, the Tanakhama writes, Boaz Natan Legoel. Boaz actually took off his shoe and handed it to the potential Redeemer. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, no, Goel Natan Levoaz. It was actually the Redeemer who gave his shoe to Boaz. So these two approaches and this debate is actually going to be very significant in terms of the symbolism of this act. So the first approach that I wanted to focus in was really the approach that we see, that it's the person who is acquiring the item. It's the person who wants to buy something. That's the person who is going to be taking off their shoe and handing it to the other. And in this way, okay, so this is the equivalent of the first opinion that we saw in the Gemara, that Boaz, who wanted to acquire the rights or the land, would actually be taking off his shoe and handing it to the Redeemer. And in this way, it looks really like what is happening is some sort of exchange. Boaz takes his shoe, hands it to the other party. In exchange, he receives back some rights to redeem the land, to redeem root, etc. And if you see, the Gemara itself explains this. The Gemara ties in this machloket that we saw above to a machloket amongst the Amoraim within the Gemara, and that's the opinion of Rav. Rav says, "Bekelav shalkone, you one affects the transaction with the vessels of the one acquiring the item. The moment that the owner pulls the vessel into his possession, the transaction isn't complete, and the ownership of the item in question is transferred to his counterpart. It's an exchange." And why is this? Explains the Gemara. Dinicha leila kone, dilihavi makne kone, kihechi diligmar velikmine. Explains the Gemara. The one acquiring the item will therefore, when he receives some sort of almost gift, will be amenable to having the one transferring the ownership of the item, meaning he will be amenable to hand over the rights, he will resolve to transfer ownership to the person. Meaning, assuming this was not a shoe, and we're going to discuss the question of why a shoe then, but if I give you my watch, you're going to say, yes, I'll transfer you those rights that I want to give you. And in fact, this is the first approach of Ibn Ezra there. Ibn Ezra says, Vayishlof Boaz shalaf nalo, in source number 4, v'natan legoel. It was Boaz who took off his shoe and he gives it to the Redeemer. V'inezek asher amru razal chalipin. And he says, this is what the rabbi said. It was an exchange. Boaz gives the shoe, he gets back rights. V'hatam, and what does that mean? Why is it, again, that we're exchanging? He says, shekabalat zehanal v'natata tachtav yulatecha. Exactly what we explained. You're going to accept this from me and you're going to give me in exchange your rights. Now, Ibn Ezra then asks the question, doesn't the shoe seem like something that's not quite appropriate for this? I mean, if you gave me a gold watch, I would understand why there's some sort of exchange going on, but a shoe, really, says Ibn Ezra, and he says, yes. Ba'avur shehu nimsa tamid. It's the reason for using a shoe is because it's always around. And he says, what are your other choices exactly? V'lo yitachin lasir chaluk o michmasayim, shelo yishaer arum. Says, better shoes than pants. That's the way Ibn Ezra puts it. So he says, yes, it's true. It's, you know, maybe you might say a little bit weird, a shoe, really. But says Ibn Ezra, yes, because we're just doing something, they had the custom to take anything that they had with them, something which would regularly be around. And therefore, he says, they effected this swap, again, either because then the person would resolve in their mind to exchange for the shoe, which was a symbol of what was being given to the seller would then give over the rights to whatever it was that he was selling, again, usually land. I would note, by the way, that it's not true that everybody agrees that this was a shoe. In fact, if you look at the Targum, as noted by the anonymous French commentary to Root over here, which some people refer to as pseudo Rashi, it quotes the Targum to Root, and which actually translated as Nartek Yad Yemine. It's true we call a Na'al a shoe, but the Targum interprets it to be something that covers a body part and actually explains that it was a glove. I guess if you can think of really fancy gloves that people wear, this makes a little bit more sense. You know, it's at least a little bit more honorable than to hand over someone's shoe. And he actually argues that this should be the correct shot by noting a certain other parallel, which many of you may be thinking about, but which we didn't address directly yet. He says, you know why the Targum must be right that this was a glove and not a shoe? Because if it was a shoe, it should actually use a different verb. Here we use the verb of shalaf, shin lamid pei, which probably means to draw off the way we've been translating it. However, he says, if in fact we're talking about an actual shoe, we should have used the root of chalatz, chet lamid sadi, as we see in the chalitza, the mitzvah of chalitza, the chalitza ceremony, where the woman draws off or unties a shoe from the foot of the person who refused to perform the mitzvah of Yibum and thus was following through with that. Now, just to talk about that a little bit more, Yibum is a mitzvah in the Torah and is a custom that may be even more expansive than was outlined in the Torah, whereby in the event that a couple was married and did not have any children and then the husband died, if the husband's brother was alive, he would generally go on to marry his deceased brother's widow. And that was the mitzvah of Yibum. And if that was not performed for some reason, if he did not want to perform that, then they would have to undergo this custom of chalitza, whereby she removes a shoe from him and a lot of other details there. There are those who have pointed to the parallels, obviously. Throughout the entire Book of Ruth, we see notions of a similar custom to Yibum. And perhaps this was a similar custom to chalitza, but we're understanding this as is clear from the context of that almost editorial comment that was thrown in, that this is a method of acquiring. This is what people would do. V'zot lefanim Yisrael ala geula v'ala timura. So assuming that this is not equivalent to some sort of chalitza ceremony, that's what we're dealing with. Nevertheless, there are those who view it this first way as, and it's an exchange. If I give you something of mine, you're going to give me back what you were going to give me. That's sort of a way of exchanging something tangible, which otherwise, you know, you might not have paid up front. There are other modifications of this view as well. Some may even understand this as a collateral until the seller was paid in full, meaning the buyer may not have always been giving over the money to begin with in full. If I am Boaz, maybe I'm not paying for whatever rights now, if there even was a payment going on here, which there may not have been. But that's beside the point. But let's assume I am selling land to you. If you give me some sort of collateral until you pay me money. That may have been the purpose of the shoe, and that's why I'd be willing to give you my field or the rights to my field at this point, even though I haven't been paid yet. But that's approach number one, that this is an exchange. Approach number two, also found in Ibn Ezra, also found in the Gemara, is the opposite. The Yesh Omrim, says Ibn Ezra in source number six, Ki ha-goel shalaf na'lo untano le-Boaz. It was actually the Redeemer who drew off his shoe and gave it to Boaz. So what's going on there? Why would a person selling or relinquishing their own rights be giving something else in addition? And says the Ibn Ezra, I think an answer that makes sense to a lot of us, V'hatam ka'asher natati lecha zehanal kein ha-geula. And really, in this approach says, just as I gave you my shoe, so too, this shoe is representing my redemption right, my rights to the field, my rights to marry Ruth. It is a symbol, as you can see by the heading over here, a symbol of what is being transferred or released. So therefore, when two people were effecting a transaction, especially of something that was not tangible, that was not movable, if I was selling a field, so it was very common for me to take some object of mine and saying, look, this is going to stand in place of what I'm giving you, and that's why this was handed over. And if you look over here in the Ho'il Moshe, the late Italian commentary, he was a student of Shadal, and he writes actually what Shadal, his teacher, told him about this. Usfarat Shadal hi shehagoel natan na'alo levoaz. He says his reasoning, like we saw in Ibn Ezra, like we see in the Gemara as well, according to the other opinion there, is that the Redeemer gave his shoe to Boaz. And he fills in the details here as to what's going on. If so, the Redeemer is like the patriarch of the family, we're reading the English of source number seven, and is transferring his property to another, and as a collateral, his shoe, one of his possessions, is given to the purchaser until the day the purchaser will descend and take hold of the property which he purchased. Shadal viewed this, according to his students, as also some sort of collateral. Normally, there was no way for me to show that my field, which may have been miles and miles away, was having its ownership transferred. So what did we do? We took something and we said, until you actually take the rights to my field, until you actually squat on it, until you descend and, in his words, take hold of the property, I want you to keep some possession of mine. And that way, as the seller, it's a collateral for the buyer to know that he's actually going to get the rights to this land when he is acquiring them. So again, if I was selling land to you, you might pay me money and then you would say, hey, Ezer, how do I know I'm going to get my land? Maybe I'm going to come to the land and someone's going to say, that's not your land, that's Ezer's land. So I say, don't worry, I'm going to give you my shoe. And if, you know, if you come to my land and you can't get it, you're going to have my shoe. That's a great collateral. Again, these questions of why a shoe is something really that we're going to have to explore. And let's do that right now. Dr. Yael Ziegler, in her excellent book on Ruth, talks about some of the different symbolic meanings of the shoe in this context. And I specifically thought that it would be especially meaningful under this subheading, when it's a symbol of what's being transferred and released. She summarizes what a lot of people have put forth before her and expands on it. And in this case, the symbolic meaning that I'd like to talk about first is specifically when we're looking at the shoes of a symbol of what's being transferred. In most cases of this, as we mentioned, what was being transferred was land. And if that's the case, shoes actually represented land. You'd be walking on land, right? And you can see it over here, the second line. Walking on one's land implies ownership, and the shoe surely acts as a representation of the act of treading on one's land. In this scenario, it seems likely that it is Redeemer's shoe that is removed as a symbol of his relinquishment of his right to take possession of Elimelech's land. Now, she focuses a little bit more on the fact that someone was taking off their shoe, not so much on the acquisition as much, but the argument is true for that as well. If two people, one was selling land to the other, one would take off their shoe, which represented their land, and hand it to the other person. And they would, through that, acquire the land. That's the symbolism that's happening there. And that's why we would choose specifically shoes. Shoes work very well because they show the shoe is what's walking on the ground. What my shoes walked on is what is being transferred to you. And that's the way that, again, it's framed in this approach. However, interestingly enough, and I think what is a very, very hard read for various reasons, including the reasons that Dr. Ziegler notes, is that there's another approach here, and that if we think about the story, land was not the only thing being acquired. Whatever the rights to Ruth were, and that's beyond the scope of what we're going to talk about here, there seems to have been an actual acquisition of root. As many of the commentaries point out, there was a kinyan, and language that's used differently than other marriages because there were rights. In this case, along with the acquisition of the rights to the field, came the requirement to marry the widow of the person who had previously owned the field, in this case, root. And therefore, some scholars have suggested, and you can see the footnote there that she brings, that Ishu actually was symbolizing the right to acquire a woman. Very, very interesting, but for a whole bunch of reasons, pretty weak. Number one, as we said, this was a common occurrence, and it talks about Giula and Timura. Giula and Timura, as we understand them, seem to be acquisition of land or objects, not always of women. So that's one issue. Otherwise, it's very hard to build a case for this. They note that in Arabic, a wife is sometimes figuratively referred to as a shoe, and that the only other place where we see this combination of rights to a woman alongside a shoe is actually chalitza, which is not enough to build a case for that, she argues. But nevertheless, those may be reasons, and when you're handing over as a symbol, that may be what the shoe represents, both of these approaches, if it's a symbol. If it's going the other way, though, if it's an exchange for land, then of course the symbolism is meaningless. I don't exchange my sandals for your land. That's not showing how your land is going to be acquired, and therefore we need the answers like Ibn Ezra's to say this was just something that people had on hand. However, I saw a comment in the Ralbag, which made me think a little bit deeper about one element of this. And he notes that if you look back at the verses, and you can scroll up if you want, to, again, Ruth 4, 6 through 9, we hear, Vayomer ha-goel levoaz k'nelach v'yishlof na'alo. It's the third verse that we have there in source number one. He said, acquire for yourself. He drew off his sandal. We have no record of the sandal being returned. And indeed, this may have been a question that was bothering lots of people, even in a general transaction. Did somebody actually keep the other person's shoe for a week, a month, until, again, the debt was paid, or until the person went down into the land? Or was this just a symbol that was happening here and now? And Ralbag says, he argues that of course it was returned. V'idmeh shekvar heshiv lo na'alo in source number 9, achar zeh ki lo yitachen sheyishaer shofet yachet v'raglo. He says, there's no way, says Ralbag, that he didn't return Boaz's shoe, according to Ralbag. Again, according to Ralbag, of course, this was passed over from Boaz to the Redeemer. And he says, of course, the Redeemer returned the shoe to Boaz. Boaz was a very honorable man. He's called an Ish Gibor Chayil. According to the sages, he is identified with one of the Shoftim, with Ibtzan. And therefore, says Ralbag, it's inconceivable that he wouldn't return him his shoe. It's true, the verse doesn't explicitly say, and he gave him back his shoe, but nevertheless, it must have been. And for that, that brings up yet another symbolism, which we didn't really go through so in depth above, which is the symbolism that accompanies chalitza. Generally speaking, most commentaries, when it comes to chalitza, seem to understand the removal of the shoe as denigrating in some way, as saying, look what you've done, you're shoeless. As we said in our title, no shoes, no service. It was something that if you didn't have shoes, you should be embarrassed. You're someone, right? It's like if you see someone walking around with their shoelaces untied, you know, people might look down at them, oh, the nevach guy. And in fact, that's the way some people translate the word, the root chalatz, simply as to untie, not necessarily even to remove. But I go beyond that. But the point is, having someone walk without a shoe was not only not a good idea, it was also embarrassing, and really embarrassing, and that was part of the point of the chalitza ceremony, in which not only would you remove a shoe, but also spit in his face. It's how dare you not perform this mitzvah, how dare you not take care of this woman, and that's the way many of the commentaries look at that case. Very interestingly, I found someone here that actually explains this concept in a similar way. And this is, again, that same Hoyel Moshe. This is his own approach, not the approach of his teacher, Shadal. And this resonated with me very much, as we'll see in a moment, because he says, Shalaf ishna alo v'natan l'ri ehu. What does that mean? Ke omer. Taking off your shoe and handing it to the other was as if one had said, Imlo, kidvarai kin aseh. If I do not do as I promise you, that I am going to follow through on my part of the deal. Lo tashiv li na'ali ve'ayeh hashuv halutzanal. He says, if I don't follow through on what I agreed to do, you keep my shoe. I'm going to be barefoot. I'm going to be klomar adam ra'oi levi zayon. a person fitting to be embarrassed. And this was the purpose of this symbol. Anytime people had a transaction with each other, they would simply pass on the shoe to say, I am committing right here and now to follow through on my side of the deal. And the reason why this especially resonated with me is because my grandfather, Yoel Emanuel, Ben David, may his neshama have an aliyah, always used to call us when we were younger and running around, used to say, you mascalzone. So here we have the same Italian word that appears in the Ho'il Moshe here, mascalzone. So when I saw that, I smiled a little bit, but I understand what that means now with a little bit extra understanding of the original Italian. And that is what he says the purpose of this symbolic exchange is. It's not that I'm giving you something and you're giving me something, but it's that we're committing here and now to follow through on what we say. And that really, I think, is a symbolism that should resonate with a lot of us and really is what symbolism is there for. We often know in life what's right and what's wrong. It's not a challenge in many, many cases to know what's right and what's wrong. In some cases it is, but in many cases we know what we're supposed to be doing. But sometimes we need that extra little nudge, that extra little push, that extra little symbol, that extra little tradition to tell us, you know what, here's a reminder of what you're supposed to be doing. And I know sometimes when you take things too far, you can really sort of belabor the point a little bit. But perhaps one example of this that also relates to Shavuot in my last minute or here too, is in regards to boundaries around the mountain at Ma'amad Har Sinai. When the Jews were approaching the mountain, they were not only told, don't come close, but they set a little marker on the mountain. Because even though we know you're not supposed to come close, you'll be put to death if you do, or you may, you know, God will put you to death if you get too close at this very holy, holy time. Nevertheless, we need our little reminders to tell us we know what's right, but let's have this symbol there to teach us what to do. And I think if we look at this, this can really be something which teaches us a lesson throughout our Jewish lives and our Jewish symbols, that many of the customs that we have, many of the reminders, the gedarim that the sages have put into place, and even many of the Torah can serve to remind us about what's right and what we should be doing. And doing some sort of symbol like this allows us to commit ourselves to continue to do what's right, even when it's sometimes hard to remember. Thank you very, very much, and have a very wonderful Shavuot.